on the right track? The universe tells you. You know that saying? He who loses the way feels lost. How simple. I get it. If I feel lost, I am lost. If I'm suffering, I must be doing something wrong. That's why I'm suffering. And therefore, there must be some other way of doing it. So these are pointers in the direction of letting go, reorientation of the way you're doing things, and remembering you can, by just changing your way of seeing things, a lot of pain and discomfort is suddenly dropped. And it is not that, it's not a matter of time, it is just a shift of perspective. To reflect one more time on what are they saying? It's not dangerous to let go of your strong sense of identification with habit patterns and limited kind of identity. Not dangerous. It is the opposite. It's the only safe way. Don't keep your eggs all in one little basket. It's very uncomfortable. So part of all of this to do with letting go of aversion and the letting go of the dependency on the trivial, the unproductive dependency on the trivial, is not to try to take your candies away from you, not to moralize, but to say, oh, there's something much better than this. You'll feel a lot better when you get out of debt. You'll like it when you get out of debt. So these are just encouragements to let go of these hindrances and to yearn for freedom. So I'll say, ask, aspire, what would it be like? Wouldn't that be nice? Maybe I should do it right away. The sooner the better. So leave these a few thoughts for your reflection today. Not to be thought about too much. Don't torture yourself with discursive thought. Just point in the direction of letting go. You don't have to write a book about it. Just let go. Be free. And do your walking meditation, your sitting meditation, without suffering. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Well, one talk that I have been giving on this tour is, could be labeled the grudge tour. I've been giving this teaching by the Buddha. I was teaching to the monks about if they have a grudge, bhikkhus. There are five ways to get rid of a grudge. So I thought if the Buddha thought it was worthwhile giving a talk to monks about this, it's probably a very suitable thing. I think everybody at some time in their life bumps into somebody, has friction with somebody, has trouble with somebody. And so it's a good topic to explore. The Buddha gives a very brief summary of what to do. Calls it five ways to get rid of a grudge, but there's a number of other talks that he's given, and so I'll explore it fairly in depth. The reason also I like to start with this retreat is that I have an idea of the overall retreat and the structure of it. Basically, I like to proceed towards developing the seven factors of enlightenment. And before you can develop the seven factors of enlightenment, before you can be enlightened and have these things come together, you have to do the preliminary work. You have to put in the causes. Since the whole teaching of the Buddha, the whole Dhamma, is about the nature of causality, he's pointing out again and again in hundreds of ways that his approach to things and what he believes to be the fundamental truth in the universe is that things happen for a reason. If you take care of those reasons, the results must occur. So it is a matter of arranging the preliminaries. And so I thought it would, way back down the line, before one can deal with the seven factors of enlightenment, one approaches them, the raising of these factors, through the four foundations of mindfulness. But before one goes to the four foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha recommends that one prepares the three whole paths, the three wholesome factors of clearing the body, speech, and mind of impediments. And so I thought I would start with the mind as a preliminary. And how does one do this? Before one can clear the body, speech, and mind of obstructions, one has to go back and examine, practice sense restraint, a withdrawal of the senses. The withdrawal of the senses is not just being in a retreat situation like this where there's no movies going on or things like that happening. It's because we obviously have our eyes open and ears open, we hear things, we see things. It is restraining the senses by the use of wise attention so that the mind doesn't focus unwisely on a sensory object that provokes aversion, or focus unwisely on a sensory object that provokes craving, desire. So it goes right back to this fundamental factor, which the Buddha says is one of the absolutely necessary causes, the foremost, most important internal cause of enlightenment, this capacity for wise attention. So I was just talking about one aspect of wise attention, that is learning not to focus on the what we call the unbeautiful. That is the source of aversion. It is unwise attention on the on a fault, something which you regard as imperfect or unbeautiful. This is because there are five ways of getting rid of a fault. The first three ways are the three of the four sublime abidings. Of course, the four sublime abidings, you're all familiar with this, you've heard it inside out. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And very nicely, the Buddha lists, says there's you can practice, in order to get rid of a grudge, get rid of ill will towards a person, you may practice three of these four abidings. Now, this is a little test. See if you're paying attention. Which of the three would it be? Could you practice loving kindness for this person? He says, yes, I recommend it. I highly recommend it. To practice loving kindness, if you have ill will, to overcome ill will, yes, indeed. How about compassion for their suffering? Yes, that's a good one too. How about sympathetic joy? Joy in their happiness. Do you think this is a realistic expectation? Being able to do this towards somebody you have a grudge towards? He lets you off the hook on that one. He doesn't really expect you to be able to do that one. So he doesn't mention it. He doesn't really think you're going to be able to enjoy their happiness, that they're having great success in life, and you perceive them to have done something. They've done you wrong in some way. They have a fault. There's a problem with them. You know, fix on them. So it's unlikely. The fact that you have this feeling already means that you're still subject to unwise attention on negativities. The Buddha himself, of course, would not have this problem. He's able to practice any of the four divine abidings, and Arahant is able to practice any of the four divine abidings towards anyone, whether that person has ill will towards them or not, whether they've done anything to them or not. This is for a person who hasn't reached those sublime heights of enlightenment. And of course he's talking to the monks, so he's fully expecting that even if one is in the robes, it may not be that you are fully enlightened or anything like this. You may still have these run-ins, difficulties with people. He's saying the first option, and of course then finally equanimity, sense of taking the balanced view from a distance of the person. It's a cool and aloof feeling, no ill will involved in it. So it's those are three possibilities. However, he doesn't leave it at that, and it's very interesting and important, I think, if you're practicing meditation a lot, hearing a lot of talks about practicing loving kindness for all beings, etc., that you realize that it's, especially if you're giving advice to anybody, that it's not always the case that the best advice to anybody that's having a problem with somebody is to switch to loving kindness. It may not be possible. And to suggest that they do this and that that's the only realistic response to this situation is may increase their problem. May increase their frustration with themselves. They may develop aversion to themselves, thinking, here I am, I'm supposed to be interested in Dhamma, and it's somebody I'm having a problem with, and I can't even practice loving kindness. I'm supposed to practice loving kindness. I'm supposed to always have loving kindness. Buddha says, well, not always. Let's say you can't do this. It's a grievous offense, and your practice is not that good. Well, what are you going to do then? The Buddha doesn't leave it at that. He doesn't say, either you practice loving kindness, compassion, or equanimity, or I can't do anything for you. That's all there is to it. It's your problem. You're the one that's suffering. That's it. Your problem. No, he's more skillful than that. There are other options. Fourth option is one which is very, very useful and often not taken up, and that is, he says, bhikkhus, if you can't do the other three, then do not bring that person to mind. Deliberately practice the non-bringing of that person to mind. This is something that we often don't explore. We tend to want to bring this person up and go at it again and again to see how we're doing with it, or just to, because it's stuck there somewhere, it keeps rotating, coming up. We kind of don't practice a lot of selection. One reason why we might be hesitant to do this is we fear that we are suppressing our feelings or denying our feelings, or that we won't have a chance to convert the feelings to loving kindness, or direct the feelings to loving kindness. So we keep bringing that person up, thinking I should have feelings of loving kindness for that person, compassion for that person, equanimity for that person. And all it comes up is irritability towards that person. So we keep doing it again and again. It's futile, not only futile, but it's the opposite. You're now by practicing ill will, it doesn't end there when the ill will leaves your mind. You just lay down some karmic tracks. Since by bringing up anger, bringing up ill will, you are predisposing yourself to experience it again. One thing of the nature of karma is that an intentional action has the tendency to recur. So if you bring this person up and ill will comes up with it, it will tend to recur. You've just reinforced it. If you bring the person up and, of course, loving kindness is with it, it will tend to recur. So whatever you're doing, remember that you're establishing some karmic tendencies. One, that this process will recur. And two, and then there's the nature of remote karmic results from this, things down the road. It doesn't just evaporate into the air. From the Buddhist point of view. So when we're discussing the nature of anger, it's not just something that you bring up to get necessarily to get rid of and then it's all gone. The actual experience of anger itself is not without consequences. So the Buddha is very wary of you bringing this person into mind because of the unwholesome programming that you might be experiencing. So some of the suggestions, now this is a very bare-bone kind of teaching, so what I suggest is that he's not interested in you suppressing this or denying this, that you never bring this person to mind. He's interested in you checking on this process every now and then, bringing the person up when you have a reasonable expectation that you may have gotten over the grudge, the irritability, ill will, and seeing if you can convert it to a positive feeling, or at least non-ill will, this neutral experience of non-ill will. You know, the in the Eightfold Path, the second factor is right intention. And there's three aspects under it: renunciation, non-ill will, non-cruelty. And it's put in the terms of non-ill will. Rather than loving kindness, it's termed non-ill will. Because non-ill will is perfectly suitable sometimes. You can't always be experiencing the positive feeling of loving kindness, but the Buddha is saying at least you should be experiencing the neutral feeling of non-ill will. You may be in some other, you might be absorbed in concentration, in which case you're not practicing loving kindness, but there's an absence of ill will. This is a wholesome condition. So my suggestion is for this kind of thing is to determine the depth of the experience, the depth of the wound, and to give yourself a realistic period of time, or like an appointment, when you're going to bring this person to mind. Or it may not even be a person. It also can be a group or an institution. A lot of people, it's interesting, a fair number of people that I speak to are in the kind of helping professions. There are social workers, psychiatric nurses or nurses or this and that. And they work with all kinds of situations, sometimes like abused children or kind of violent situations. And usually they don't have a problem so much with their clients or the people that are involved. They usually have a lot of understanding for those people. Where they have problems is with their employers or the institution they work for. They often have a great deal of anger towards the bureaucracy or their colleagues or the people who are above them. The frustration of not being able to clearly communicate how important certain things are to these people. So they are able to handle the obvious, but these people that are abusing each other and so forth, and they understand that they should be, and so they're able to handle it. But somehow they expect, it's the expectation that these people who are doing the same job you're doing or in charge or supervising should know better. So the moment you think that somebody should be anything, you're already giving yourself an excuse for anger. So, of course, it's getting rid of that sense of anybody should be anyway, will give you a great deal of relief in this matter. However, suppose that you can't get rid of it that easily, just by the fact that people shouldn't be some other way. They are the way they are. Institutions are the way they are. And anger is of no profit to you. So one can make an appointment for minor situations. Deliberately do not bring this person to mind for a week. But make a very clear appointment so your mind doesn't feel ill at ease, as if this situation is not being addressed, or it's being denied, or you're covering it over. So that in 7 days, you can even have an hour, 3:30 in the afternoon, Monday afternoon. I'm going to bring this situation back up, see how I'm doing in the meantime, how I'm processing this. Maybe just a little bit of time will have let the irritability, the aversion, the ill effects of my encounter will have subsided. So this is a possibility. In the meantime, one can also practice these positive forms like loving kindness, compassion, etc., for other beings, not the one that you're having trouble with. Because often, if you can generate a wholesome, positive feeling, then the accessibility to this positive emotion is much easier. If somebody comes along, you're having a difficult day. If somebody comes along who you have a bit of a problem with, or is just barely on the edge of neutrality, they can push the scales in one direction, and you tend to get more irritable. Or somebody comes along as a very good friend and cheers you up and so forth, you can end up forgetting about it all and losing your sense of irritability. So the mind can be swung in either direction. The scales can be tipped in either direction, so you should be highly aware of this. And therefore focus, if you're going to bring anybody into your mind, leave the one that you have difficulty with out of the mind very deliberately, and bring ones that you don't have difficulty in. And this colors the mind, this colors the texture of the mind is different. You feel stronger, more well, you're able to forgive and forget and let go. And so this is the strategy for this. Of course, not all of these encounters will you even be able to conceive of dealing with it in a week. The appointment doesn't have to be for 7 days. It can be for a month if it's a strong problem. If it's a long-term situation, it may require more than a month to deal with. The appointment may be for next May, in other words, next year. If it's been a difficult, long relationship, with relatives or a spouse, somebody, the rut is worn rather deeply into your forehead. And it's not restored in a week, not even in a month, not in 6 months sometimes. You might care to make an appointment for this situation in a year, see how things are going. But in that, whatever that period of time is, one of your exercises in mindfulness is to be aware when the thought is drifting back to the object. Unwise reflection, unwise attention on a fault. So this is part of your very clear instructions to the mind. The mind likes clear instructions. It's getting very clear instructions. It's completely confident. Like, this is one of the reasons why I like to give this talk, is that sometimes people think, maybe I should just not think about this person or something, but I wonder if that's the right thing to do. And they're not too sure of it. So it's good to really reflect with somebody and hear it out loud that it's a very good technique. It is a good technique, and you should commit yourself to it very well. If you cannot let go of this thing easily or convert it to positive emotions, this is a very good, this neutral ground is a very good strategy. And I can give clear instructions to your mind to do this. And then there are also situations where it's not going to be a year. It might be 5 years. There are grave injustices done, where it's not even just an argument over money or something like that. It's not even just the little things that happen between people, an affair or violence or something like that, where it's just profound, it's beyond that. I think I mentioned the story last year about the Cambodian woman who had come out of the situation, the killing fields, and it's not something you get over in a week. It was something that she ground on her for years, just the hatred for the people who did, you know, just amazing kind of inhumane actions to her, all her relatives, people who were close to her, and so forth. In those situations, you know, people were, children were forced to shoot their parents and things like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But so those kind of things do take some time. Neutrality is the best thing. But even those can be gotten over. The story with her was that she eventually was not only able to approach them and say, I forgive you, but she was able to come to the point where she said, forgive me for the ill will that I've been radiating towards you. These are the soldiers who did these things. So it's possible to get rid of anything. It is possible to overcome anything. And so it's always good to have a few inspiring examples, also to think that, you know, my situation, whatever mine is, it makes you feel better to realize that your situation, it could be worse, could be lots worse, and that people get over these things. It's nice to know that you can get over it. Sometimes you doubt it. You wonder if you'll ever get over it. So that's strategy number four, is to have this, make full use of neutrality and the exercise of mindfulness to simply not bring the person to mind. Leave it aside. And in the meantime, develop your practice. Develop it in positive ways to other beings. Then the last strategy is, and of course, again, this, the Buddha speaking to Buddhist monks. I think the first three strategies, the first four strategies, loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, and not bringing the person to mind, may be fairly appealing and directly usable by people who are not particularly Buddhist. Fifth strategy is one of the benefits of being a Buddhist who has a sense of confidence in karma. And that is to, when you cannot make any headway with these things, is to remember that whatever happens in the universe has a reason, and whatever one does, the appropriate results will appear. So one thinks beings are the owners of their karma. They inherit their karma. Why should I concern myself with vengeance or thoughts of revenge or how this shouldn't be? It's all taken care of already. Whatever is appropriate in the universe, that will be done. If one is not deeply confident of the principle of karma, that there are results from these things, then one also can say, well, if there isn't any such thing, then what does it matter? Why should I'm not going to impose justice on the universe. If justice isn't in the universe, then I'm not going to be able to arrange it. So I might as well forget it. If justice is in the universe, if it's true that the appropriate results occur, then I don't have to concern myself with it. And of course, one should also be concerned with the results that one will receive, and one receives immediately from the sense of hatred or anger. It's already a very unpleasant experience. So the Buddha speaks of these three basic unwholesome roots, greed, hatred, and delusion, and calls this particular root, anger, is a great stain, but easily gotten rid of. Desire, greed, is a lesser stain, but very difficult to get rid of. And delusion, the misperception of things, the misunderstanding of things, is a great stain and very difficult to get rid of. So it's focusing particularly on this problem of anger, because it is a great stain. It is intrinsically unpleasant experience for the person who generates it in the moment, and has always negative results. But he does say that for that very reason it is easier to get rid of, because it has got its own self-conditioning process in it. It doesn't feel good. It has negative results. You don't like it. You try to shake it off. It's sticky, though. It's very sticky. But based on unwise attention. So he says that because of that, you should have some reassurance that although it is a very uncomfortable experience, very unprofitable, and has negative results for the person who has the anger, it is possible and it is easier to get rid of than the other two things. So those are five methods of removing a grudge. Buddha goes on to talk about other ways as well, not in that particular discourse, but I thought I'd mention them. One is to look for redeeming qualities. Now, this is a fairly common expression as well. Remember that they have redeeming qualities. He makes a very great case for this in some very interesting similes. He says that there are people that you may have had a problem with, you have aversion towards, and they fall into different categories. Basically, you would divide the person up into three parts. They are their actions, their speech, and their capacity for serenity of the mind. And there are four types. There's the person who is relatively pure in their behavior, but very impure in their speech. And from time to time, they attain a calmness of mind, calmness and clarity of mind. This is one type. Then there's the opposite, and the reverse. Person is appropriate in their speech, practices right speech, but their behavior is problematic. And from time to time, they have moments of clarity and calm. Then there's the kind of person who has a problem in behavior, problem in their speech, but from time to time, they have a little clarity. And there's the person who has no redeeming aspects to their behavior, no redeeming aspects to their speech, and they have nothing but delusion. They never have any, even a moment of clarity. And this is one type of person. And then finally, there's having ill will, a problem, with somebody who is very well behaved in behavior, and their actions are very good. Their speech is very good, and frequently they are able to attain calmness and clarity of mind. This is another option. You can have a problem with a person like that. Because obviously if you have problems, you're not fully enlightened to begin with, but and that would include about 99.999% of humanity. So he says, what you want to do is make a desperate effort, like a person who's walking along. Now, for the first type of person, where there's either they have some aspect of their speech is good, but their behavior is bad, and they have moments of clarity. Or the other way, that their behavior is good, but their speech is problematic. A man is walking along in the desert, very, very thirsty, scorched by the sun, shaking with the need for water. And he comes across a pool of water, but it's got slime and water plants growing on the surface. So what does this person do? Do they walk by that? No, they part the slime and water plants on the surface and immerse themselves in the water and drink to relieve their thirst. This is the case for the person who is their speech or their action is problematic, but some aspect of them is redeemable. And okay, time for some questions. questions and answers.